My name is Kevin Jackson. I'm the director of Bravado Media Group, which also encompasses Cardiff Music Studios.
I'm John Davis. I'm the manager of Cardiff Music Studios.
I'm John Pountney. I am a director of Ram Jam, which runs the building that Cardiff Music Studios is part of.
Well, it's the launch of the recording studio, the new Cardiff Music Studios, just so we can unveil the place to our friends and to also friends of the building from the past.
Originally, way back, I think it was built in about 1925, mm-hmm. did we find out? Then it was a dance hall, which is presumably where this parquet floor originates from. Upstairs was a catering company. It went through lots of different guises and ownerships until I first came up here about 10 years ago with a Cardiff band of the time. It was then a recording studio and rehearsal space. And that's how I first came into contact with the building. I then came up here, 10 years later, because Kevin's office was based here. In the meantime, it had been used by a record company called FS Vinyl, who had been and gone.
And the place was left like
A tomb.
A tomb, really. Yeah, it had. You could see that great things had happened here, but it had been left in a stasis, if you like.
Yeah.
And we came down and cleared a few bits and pieces out, and then before we knew it, we were right
ripping
in the thick
place
of it,
apart,
and
we were really
starting again, I suppose. I mean, it was only when the management of the building as a whole disbanded that suddenly somebody had to pick up the baton, really.
Or the building was going to close.
So myself and John, we took hold of upstairs and tidied that up and sorted out all of the tenants and then wandered downstairs and found all of this. Now, obviously, I knew it existed, but I didn't quite know the extent to which it had been neglected at that time.
And who owned what?
Yes.
What was happening?
Because it's been here for 10 years, there were lots of people that had been involved before. And it was only when we took it over that those people started to come back again. And some were very constructive. They told us a lot of history, which was fascinating stuff. Others came to collect equipment that maybe they'd invested in. So it was quite a struggle to try to find out who had a legitimate part in the history of Warwick Hall and the new Cardiff Music Studios.
I described it at the time to my girlfriend that it was almost like archaeology. Mm. You were scraping layers of stuff away and finding things underneath,
yes.
Metaphorically and physically down here. I mean, down here was in a hell of a state. It was three layers of carpet. All they'd done every time was just re-lay carpet over the old carpet without even hoovering it, which was nice to find 15-year-old fag butts and God knows what underneath there. Upstairs had a weird and wonderful array of previous tenants in, photographers, artists, all of whom had left a kind of tidal, when a river goes down and you know it leaves all the detritus on the banks of the river, that was what upstairs was kind of like, really. As people had moved through the building, they'd left a tide of rubbish, some really interesting stuff, some absolute rubbish, basically.
It was mirrored down here as well. There was so much so much equipment that belonged to bands.
History.
That had gone.
Yeah.
Bands that we were able to get hold of and say, you know, what's happening with your stuff? And it transpired that they just left it here as storage. So effectively, this business had become storage space.
Yes.
What we all, I speak for myself, I don't know, was conscious of is that when people that had set Warwick Hall up came to speak to us, they said that, yes, that when we started, we had all this enthusiasm and we had all of this drive and all of this energy, but it just started to fall by the wayside over time. So
yeah.
I think from that, we've learned that, yes, now we're feeling that same energy now and motivation to get things moving again. But I think the difference is we're very realistic about the task ahead. And we're putting in realistic resources into
yes.
it. And I think the attendance for the launch coming up on Friday, the fact that we're now topping nearly 100 people, just shows that there is this massive interest, and it was very much a sleeping giant at that time.
Yeah, yes, sleeping giant is the best phrase.
We want to return it to its heyday. And also, you know, as a business, we would like it to make some money. But at the same time, hit records have been made here, and it would be great, again, to be a part of a building or part of a business that was having such a huge interest with audiences.
But and it was a creative hub.
And was a creative hub, yeah.
You know, they had the Mannix in here, rehearse. Previously, I mean, and what it still will be now, is it was used a lot for rehearsals for big gigs. So we had Franz Ferdinand in here. We had, I say we, but previously, the Stereophonics, the Manic Street Preachers.
Los Campesinos.
Yeah, well, a who's who, basically, of the last 10 years of the, you know, Cardiff's music scene. McCluskey, Future of the Left. And then suddenly it just seemed to fall off a precipice. Mm.
This warehouse feel came in where people just used it to store kit.
Yes. I was upstairs one day, I heard the doorbell peeping, ringing. What kind of noise would you describe that as, Kevin?
A buzzing.
A buzzing, a resonant buzzing. Mm. I answered the door and basically it was John, who I'd known for about 10 years, who I gave your first gig to, is that right?
It was, yeah, first ever gig.
In a very previous life, I used to put on stuff in Tommy's Bar in Howard Gardens, Uwick. We used to put on a cinema night, and we used to put bands on. This is literally about May 2000, something like that, isn't it? It's a long time ago.
Easily, yeah.
And John was playing as JT Mouse at that point, and still is JT Mouse. And he'd made an album. John Mouse. What's the JT then?
Well, I dropped the
Oh, he's dropped the.
Yeah.
Was it John the Mouse?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know he dropped the.
Oh. Yeah.
Gosh.
It'd always be JT Mouse to me.
Yeah. So, obviously, what had happened was that in about 2002, John made an album in here. He come knocking, looking for copies of his album because he'd restarted the band and he was playing a gig. And I opened the door and he was like, "What on earth are you doing in here?" I was like, "What on earth are you doing up here?" I explained that I'd taken over the building with Kevin. John was looking for his album, so I said, "I know exactly where they are. We've got about 500 boxes of them hidden away."
It was a big seller.
There were an awful lot of albums here, boxes, and hundreds of albums from vinyl.
Which was a shame, really, because we ended up skipping a huge 2,500, 3,000 CDs because there was no use for them, you know. So John came looking for his CD. I said, "I know exactly where it is." I said to John, "What are you doing now?" And John said,
"I'm going to take over these recording studios."
And I remember walking up the stairs and seeing, and I buzzed the door. John Poutney opened the door and said, "Kevin, I've got somebody you need to meet." And that was when I was introduced to John. And John said, "I'm a sound engineer and I've got experience in this." And I think that's what's unified the us as a trio, is that we can all see the end result.
Because, what I saw you was a building that hadn't altered since I first came here and recorded you 10 years ago. It was exactly the same.
It was like a time capsule.
But when I came here 10 years ago, I was full of that enthusiasm that Kevin and John mentioned earlier about the place. It was a great place to come. You had a good vibe, so I wanted, with these guys, to make it a great place to come again. Some, not like the old Warwick Hall, but in the building. And it will be. It will be a great. Already we've had some bands coming in, practicing, rehearsing. Because rehearsing is as equally as an important part of the music process as recording.
Recording, yeah.
You have a look in Buzz Magazine, wherever, there's 10 or 12 Cardiff bands playing live every single night.
And they all need to
every
rehearse
every single night,
somewhere.
So they all need to rehearse somewhere.
There are a lot.
There's lots of recording studios.
20, 25 easily, if you Google it.
And there's a fair few rehearsal spaces around
as
well.
I mean, what we thought when we came down here was we need to offer a space which is...
This is going to offer more.
A bit more homely, it's a bit more niche. We need, creatively and the market demands that we offer something that is a bit different to everyone else. So we've taken time with the, furnishings, fixings. We've made it look...
50s, isn't it?
Well, 50s, generally 50s, but retro. So that people come in here and it feels more homely and they feel more at home in the space. we'd rather have it like a creative hub where people come here and they feel inspired by the space rather than we've got to go somewhere to to rehearse.
Anybody who is available to use the space in the daytime, I'm going to try and engage with.
You know, we've got...
We've got the artist gallery outside in the corridor.
We're going to be doing quarterly gigs where we probably have an invited act and an invited audience, and we're hoping to record that and put that online, to film it and to record.
It's worth mentioning the recording studio as well. It's highly spec'd.
Yes.
As much as... We've gone for this look and feel, this shabby, chic kind of feel. We do have high-tech equipment. We do run Pro Tools 9, and we are capable of producing industry-standard music.
Yeah.
So we hope we have that marriage between cutting-edge technology, but a place that is comfortable and is significantly different from the competition.
Yes.
But it's really, bands have to come down and experience, and it's very difficult to describe what it's like here. Auric Hall was always intended to be this creative hub.